Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman is one of the most recognizable and trusted voices on economics and policy today. Through a regular column in the New York Times, a popular blog, and best-selling books, he looks to communicate the basic economics that we need to understand public policy. His new book is Arguing with Zombies: Economics, Politics, and the Fight for a Better Future. Drawn mainly from his Times column, it covers a wide range of issues, organized thematically and framed in the context of a wider debate, explaining the complexities of healthcare, housing bubbles, tax reform, and Social Security. Paul Krugman is a recipient of the 2008 Nobel Prize in Economics. He has been a columnist at the New York Times for 20 years and is also a distinguished professor at City University of New York. I spoke with him on Saturday in Manchester, Vermont, in an event presented by Northshire Bookstore.
You tweeted just this afternoon, a bleak thought. I often tell people not to worry too much about disasters in advanced countries because such countries are incredibly resilient. They have wealth. They have competent civil services. For example, I've never bought into the disaster scenarios for Brexit. In other words, is Trump's America, we're now on the second tweet, by the way, is Trump's America still an advanced country as we normally imagine it? We have huge reserves of expertise and talent to deal with crises, but these people are disdained and distrusted. It's not clear whether the message that the coronavirus is a real problem, not a PR issue, has made it through. Albany gets it, Sacramento gets it, the White House, for the first time, I'm getting seriously scared.
Yeah. So the remark, for, by the way, people don't know, so Britain has left the European Union, which is a mistake. It'll make Britain poorer. It'll hamper their industry. But there have been some of the anti-Brexit people have warned about real disaster scenarios where you have 150-mile-long traffic jams at Dover and Calais, and supplies of medicine run out and everything, and I've been saying, although that's theoretically possible because you're introducing a border where there was none. In fact, Britain is an advanced country. It's got the civil service knows what to do. They will find workarounds. They'll manage to make to avoid the worst because we know these are advanced countries deal with natural disasters. They deal with calamities. You look at we just have enormous capacity, but under current leadership in the United States right now, I mean, we have the expertise, we have the people, we have the bureaucratic capacity, but just reading reports today, the people at CPAC, conservative political action conference, were when journalists have said, well, I probably shouldn't shake hands with you because we coronavirus. And they said, oh, I don't believe that. The CDC is just part of the deep state. They're just trying to undermine Trump. So we're in that kind of world where although we have all of the capacity to respond to this or any other crisis, all of the things all the reasons why America actually is great, we have leadership that doesn't want to hear about it and it actively punishes people for talking sense.
So great. So So a two-part question. One is, what does that mean for our current economic situation of what we all see, what is happening, and is there any way to forecast what is coming? And the second part of this large question is that you have a president who is largely running on the economy. And the great, quote-unquote, economy that he created or inherited or however it's interpreted.
Okay. So on the first part, I've been saying for a while now that the important thing that until just maybe now, if people ask me what's going to cause the next economic crisis in the United States, I would say I don't know. There wasn't anything obvious on the horizon. Wasn't sure the housing bubble of the mid-2000s, that was obvious, I thought. And it was obvious it was going to be nasty when it burst, although I didn't realize how nasty it was going to be. But there wasn't anything comparable on the scale, so I didn't know where the next bump in the road was coming from. But what was obvious, has been obvious all along, is that we don't know where the next bump was, but we do know that the shock absorbers are shot. The normal response, so now let's get a little wonkish here. The normal response, the first line of defense, the aspirin you take when something goes wrong with the economy, is that the Federal Reserve, which is still a haven of technocratic competence, for the moment anyway, it cuts interest rates. But we start with a situation where interest rates are already very low. The Fed just cut a few days ago. Before that, the rates that the Fed effectively controls were about 1.5%. And in an average recession, the Fed has cut interest rates by 5 percentage points. So it basically had only about 30% as much ammunition as it uses normally to deal with a recession. And that's and of course, the rest of the advanced world is in even worse shape. Interest rates are actually negative in Europe and Japan. So the first line of defense is, or the shock absorber for normal stuff, wasn't there. We have a world economy which is for the moment relatively close to full employment, but only thanks to an ultra low interest rate regime. So no real room to cut. So if anything bad happens, well, there's no easy response. It requires actually something more sophisticated. It requires real leadership from Washington. So good luck with that. And so anything nasty could be anything, even a moderately bad shock, the kind of thing that in the 1990s the Fed could have dealt with without ever requiring the politicians really step in at all, is now a really serious problem. And then along comes this thing, I'm no epidemiologist, but it's clear that this is actually really serious. And the economic consequences are looking quite serious. It's partly disrupting supply. We have these global supply chains and all of that. Once you start to look into it, the number of things that depend upon at least some components shipped from China is huge. But even beyond that, when people stop traveling, stop going out, stop spending, you've got this major hit to the economy. Which is exactly the kind of scenario that we were fearing. And just an hour ago, I just read that Italy. I mean, the thing has spread a lot in Italy.
Right.
There's absolutely no reason to think it won't do the same here. And Italy has just quarantined the province of Lombardy. Nobody goes in or goes out without special permission. That's more than 10 million people. That's effectively like sealing off the city of New York. Think about how big a shock that is going to be to the world economy.
So you're the one I rely on thinking about that for me. So
okay.
What do you...
Yeah. Yeah.
So what does that mean? But long term...
Well, okay. I mean, this... the economy is probably not going to be the economy Trump was counting on for the election. That's what we're thinking of. It's possible this will all sort of burn out in time for a rebound, but we're getting pretty close. Political scientists say that it's really the year or so before the election that matters, even if this is all over and things are coming back by the summer, that's probably... not good news for Trump. If and when the virus is finally contained, then the economy presumably bounces back. But the underlying condition of the economy was weak to begin with. I mean, again, we were able to have more or less full employment, but only with these very, very low interest rates. It's the shock absorbers, the normal things that we do to cope with bad stuff. As the bumper stickers don't quite say, stuff happens, right?
Right.
And and when stuff happens, we're very poorly prepared to deal with it, in large part because the the technocrats, the people at the Federal Reserve, don't have the ammunition, and then the other parts of the government that might do smart stuff. So you can think of various kinds of smart things that the executive branch of the federal government might do. And the answer to anyone who suggests that is two words, Steve Mnuchin, or maybe four words, Steve Mnuchin and Larry Kudlow. I mean, trying to imagine them responding in a smart way to what's coming is really hard to do.
What has your... Obviously, these are people you knew long before the Trump administration.
Yeah. Well, not Mnuchin, but yeah.
And so you sort of see this coming down the pike for a long time then, as far as the concern about a crisis and the ability of the people in an economic charge to be able to handle it.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I famously made a bad call on election night. Predicting disaster, which I retracted 3 days later, saying this is I let my political dismay override my economics. And I said in the short term, actually, what's probably going to happen is that Trump is going to run bigger budget deficits, which is actually going to give the economy a bit of a boost, at least initially. But my concern right from the beginning was that you were bringing in people who have I've made number of bad calls over the course of my life. Larry Kudlow, who is effectively the administration's chief economist, he's somebody who, I make a distinction in the book, in Arguing with Zombies, between conservative professional economists, of whom there are many, and many of whom I respect, and professional conservative economists, which is something quite different. And Kudlow is a professional conservative economist, and he has an absolutely unbroken track record. He's never been right about anything. And was representative. I mean, that's the kind of people they want. They don't. There's a kind of pathos to the good conservative economists. Economics is a relatively conservative profession, as it turns out. You know, compared where I work now is an interdisciplinary shop with political scientists and sociologists, and you know, economists are a whole lot more conservative on average than sociologists. But the smart conservative economists are not wanted. There are none of them in the Trump administration. There are none of them advising Republicans in Congress because they only want the hacks. They only want the people who are essentially hired guns, propagandists, pushing the zombie ideas. And so those are the people who are now in charge of managing any response that we have to an economic crisis.
Paul Krugman's new book is Arguing with Zombies, Economics, Politics, and the Fight for a Better Future. It is published by Norton. I spoke with him on Saturday night at an event presented by Northshire Bookstore. The rest of our conversation will air on The Book Show next week. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.